The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I have to begin this week's episode by asking you how satisfied you are with the pack of J-League cards you got in our Patreon exclusive video.
I'm very satisfied. I think I cleaned up there. Andres Iniesta, obviously the pick of the bunch, but Mitch Langerak out first. Hayashi, Thiago Martins, Wakizaka, even the J2 card I got with Koji Yamase. He's a former Japan international. So, yeah, I didn't get one of those autographed cards, so well done to those that did, but I'm pretty satisfied with my lot.
Yeah, I reckon you've done okay, as I think I said at the time on the video. Yeah, the only Iniesta we pulled out of the two boxes that went to you. So at the moment, yeah, I haven't had any comments or offers for that card. I don't know whether you might be fielding some in the days to come when the rest of the Patreons watch the video. But yeah, I hope you and the patrons did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun to open up those two boxes of cards and. Not everybody's going to be satisfied with the results, but yeah, we're going to try and work it out that, everybody will hopefully be able to get at least one or two cards of the team they support. So, I was quite happy with the whole thing as an event to Sam.
Yeah, it was really good to get good thing to get Patreons involved. I hope they enjoyed it and are just satisfied with the cards they end up with. I mean, if anyone had pulled out an Oshima card, I might have been open to a trade for Iniesta, but it's going to take something pretty special to prize him away from me.
Yes, understandable. All right, well, we did intend to begin this episode with Lionel Piguet talking about the three Kansai clubs and their results from J1 Match Day 9, as Lionel was at two of the games in Kansai this past weekend that we'll get to in a moment. But, when a result like Nagoya 6, Urawa 2 comes in, you simply have to rip up the agenda of what you intended to lead the podcast with. And, Sam, an absolute day out for Naoki Maeda and his Grampus teammates. And, it goes without saying, the evening could hardly have gone any worse for Urawa.
Yeah, I think magnificent performance. I'm sure we'll get to the mistakes and just the terrible play from Urawa. But full credit to Nagoya, full credit to Massimo Ficcadenti. I don't think I'd have ever had him down as a 6-2 victor at any stage this season. But a full credit to him. The way that this team is playing, they are a little bit more defensive in the way that they are more organised at the back. But their play on the counter-attack and the players that they do have, they can rip open any team, especially a team like Reds who are a little bit open. But full credit to them. Maeda, four very nice finishes. But the combination play with him, Gabriel Xavier was in there. It showed how important he can be in that number 10 role. And Abe has played very well himself, but Xavier came in. His interchange of passing was so good. And Kanazaki had his best game for Nagoya. He obviously running into the channels is probably his forte rather than necessarily being in front of goal, but he was doing that really well. Just dragged defenders out of position, left the space for the likes of Mateus and Maeda. And yeah, it was an almost perfect performance from Nagoya.
Now, let's play devil's advocate here for just a second, Sam. Should Naoki Maeda's first goal in the ninth minute have stood? Because Yutaka Yoshida was most definitely standing in an offside position and tried to jump out of the way of the ball. It could be argued, and Shusaku Nishikawa certainly went to great lengths to try to argue to the officials that Yoshida was impeding him in some way. Do you feel that should have stood? And, I mean, goodness knows what would have happened if that had been ruled out. But obviously Nagoya were in some sort of a mood. But, I think the question has to be asked.
Yeah, it does. I've seen them given both ways in the J-League in the last few years, actually. He's obviously very close to the ball. I don't think Nishikawa would have stopped it if Yoshida was there or not, but I wouldn't have been surprised if that was there ruled out. So maybe Nagoya could consider themselves a touch fortunate, Reds a touch unfortunate, but the way that goal was created, the Urawa's defending kind of deserved to be punished, so I think it was the right result at the end of the day. But yeah, this goal, if it isn't given, you never know what could happen. So yeah, a little bit unfortunate, but I would just go with the officials. I don't think Nishikawa would have saved it otherwise.
No, fair enough then. So yeah, that was in the ninth minute, Naoki Maeda's first of the evening, and I believe his young son had instructed him, if he scored, to do an Ultraman celebration. So he's definitely given that a workout on the evening, obviously trying out four different versions of it, I believe. But yeah, so after the slightly controversial first in the ninth minute, well, just a minute later, Maeda was celebrating again, this time a perfectly legitimate goal from an inch-perfect cross from the left from Mateus. Mateus, a little bit of an enigma at the couple of his stops so far in both divisions, J1 and J2, Sam. But, I mean, yeah, as you said, you can see, if he's fitting into this lethal-looking machine on the counter-attack, then, I mean, yeah, it looks like he might have found his perfect role at his perfect club here.
Yeah, I think the loan move at the end of last season to Yokohama really helped him, and it gave him the confidence. As you said, maybe at Omiya and even at the beginning at Nagoya, he wasn't necessarily the one, the all action, he wasn't there. You couldn't rely on him necessarily week in, week out, but he had such competition at Yokohama and had to play to such a level to get into that team. And he's just taken that on this season, and he's been allowed the freedom by Ficadenti, which I wasn't necessarily sure he would be. And he's absolutely run with it. He's played very well in pretty much every game. Even though he got this assist, but he wasn't on the score sheet, but the work he does on and off the ball, I think it's just meshes so well with this kind of front four that they have at Nagoya. And yeah, he's been one of the players of the season for me this year.
All right, yeah, fair enough. Can't really argue with that. And then, just 2-0. After just 10 minutes, rather. Nagoya just carried on, and, in remarkable circumstances, it was actually 5-0 by half-time. Yao Schmidt headed in after Mateus played a corner short to Gabriel Xavier, and he crossed into the centre. A powerful header from Schmidt. Then Xavier turned provider again with a dynamic move in the centre circle to release Naoki Maeda, who finished crisply past Nishikawa. That was 4-0 in the 38th minute. And then right before half-time in the 45th minute, after a bit of a scare for Grampus. Obviously, they were 4-0 up, so they weren't too worried about it. But Ryosuke Yamanaka smashed a shot against the post. From there, Grampus struggled to clear the ball, but Yuichi Maruyama hoofed it upfield. Mu Kanazaki headed down for Xavier, who made Daisuke Suzuki look very foolish out by the right-hand touchline, and motored into the box, and again crisply finished past Nishikawa. So, Sam, we know how much momentum and how much consistency, confidence plays a role in the J-League. Once you get on a roll of wins, teams can go very, very far, as we saw with Yokohama, in the last 10 games of last season, swept their way to the title. I mean, is that this, boiled down into a microcosm of 45 minutes? Basically, everything that Nagoya tried just worked, and Reds were just completely swamped and completely helpless?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I just thought, the first two goals, I thought Nagoya kind of built up well, and from then on, they got the confidence, as you said. But Reds just, their heads dropped, and some of the defending in this game was horrific. And the third, fourth, and fifth are all examples of that. I think Ryan Steele has gone on for many, many years about how Reds can't deal with set pieces. And this third goal, Schmidt's there, he's against three defenders, and he's the only one that jumps for the ball. It's so easy, and it's just pretty appalling. And then you mentioned Suzuki. The fourth and fifth goals, I mean, it's an absolute travesty from him, and he's rightly subbed at half-time. His communication is not there. He was just sprinting towards the ball and then not actually getting there and leaving himself completely out of position. As you said, Xavier made him look foolish as he just ran ran without any direction. He was just sprinting and then got easily turned. And then Hashioka is kind of covering Deng, but there's no communication between them. So Deng then pulls back into the middle and just leaves Xavier with so much time to find the spot in the bottom corner to finish. So it was just really dreadful from Urawa defensively. I think that was the key. And they haven't been good all season or all of last season. Even when they were winning, I didn't think they were playing too well. And a lot of it comes down to the manager's selections in defence. I mean, it's kind of team selection is a little all over the place. In any case, there's no real rhyme or reason behind anything. But he started this season with Deng and Iwanami as the centre-back pairing, which is fine. If you want to move away from Makino this season, it's probably the time to do it, because nothing really matters. Red probably aren't going to win the league. So, yeah, go for it. But they were winning, but then he just drops Iwanami completely. Makino comes in, then looks pretty decent. I mean, he's a Japan international. He's got the experience. He's probably the ideal player to guide Deng through. Deng has played very well, actually, but without a Makino next to him, Suzuki was all over the place. Hashioka is young, he's inexperienced, he needs someone to direct him, and that didn't really come from Deng, and there was a lack of communication there. And Yamanaka is much better going forward than he is defensively. So this backline was completely all over the place. There was no cover in midfield, so it was just counterattacks. It was so easy for Nagoya to get from one box to the other, because there was no challenge in midfield. It was just far too easy for Nagoya to cut Reds open. And I think, yeah, it was just everything that could have gone right did go right for Nagoya in that first half, but a lot of it was caused by Reds' mistakes.
Yeah, fair enough. And all right, yeah, well, yeah, no Reds supporters want to watch this back. No questions asked, but I reckon, yeah, Mr. Otsuki will probably force his players to sit through larger sections of the first half. They did pull a goal back almost immediately from the restart, as you said, after they made a few changes at halftime. Sam, Leonardo got his fifth of the season, a very, very bundled finish, but, yeah, he was Johnny on the spot bundle the ball in after Mitch Langerak had saved his initial shot. But, Naoki Maeda was not finished there, and he just 2 minutes after Reds had made it 5-1, he restored their five-goal advantage with a crisp first-time finish from Mu Kanazaki's cutback. And, mercifully for Reds, Maeda was subbed 3 minutes later. I mean, goodness knows how many goals he would have ended up with, Sam. He might nearly have set the new J1 record if he had been able to play the full 90 minutes. But, Massimo Figuidenti has held him back for next week, and heaven help whoever Grampus play in round number 10. Leonardo got his sixth of the season, so he did bag a brace in the second half. A fairly decent finish to round out the scoring, but 6-2, as one-sided a game as you will see. Just absolutely a fantastic performance in the first half from Nagoya. And, we've kind of, I guess, begrudgingly had to sing their praises at times so far, Sam, because they had started better than most of us expected. So I guess it's, what can they do this season if they keep this up? I mean, they could probably definitely, they could challenge the top four. I mean, you can't put in a performance like this and not come to that conclusion, surely.
But they have the quality in the squad to do it. But this time last season, they were in a similar position. I think they even topped the league at roughly the similar stage, and then they just dropped off. So they do have that in them. But if you look at the back line, now that Figuidenti has come in and has actually sorted that line out, it's a lot more organised. Previously, under Kazama especially, they were a little bit all over the place. But Maruyama at the back is really kind of guiding that back line, and it looks like it's going to work. And Langerak behind them is a very, very good goalkeeper. And then once they've got the midfield options, like Inagaki, as I said, I think when he joined, is the perfect Figuidenti player, because he does all the dirty stuff in midfield. He's the one that will break up play. He'll get in people's faces, and then he's good enough on the ball to then start attacks. Then you've got the attacking riches that we've mentioned already. There's enough in this team. And the strength in depth as well. When you bring on Yuki Soma, for example, fantastic young player, he's going to create chances, score goals. And they're without Yonemoto and Hiroyuki Abe for this game as well. So, yeah, on paper, this team should be challenging. And it's just whether they have the mentality that they haven't shown in the last couple of seasons, where they have started well and faded off. But as you said, with the momentum that you can get in these sorts of runs when the games are coming thick and fast, if you have one good week, you get 9 points. So you don't have to necessarily be as consistent for as long. You can just rack up points quite quickly the way this league is set up. And I think, yeah, if they continue to play the way that they do, I think a Champions League spot should definitely be the aim, if not maybe even a title push potentially. But yeah, as I said, I don't want to always get too hyped on Nagoya, because they have a tendency to let you down.
Yeah, I reckon it's the last two seasons they've got off to good starts, isn't it, Sam? And then they've really, really struggled. And I swear to God, I did not know this, But, yeah, their next opponent, they play FC Tokyo away, and that is absolutely... Oh, that's ruined my night 10 minutes into the podcast. Now I'm just going to be thinking about that for the rest of the week, what they're going to do to FC Tokyo at Ajin Mata Stadium on Saturday night. Oh, good grief. All right, well, we better change topics and call Lionel up, I think, Sam. He's waiting in the wings for us. So, yeah, once again, well done to Nagoya. Comprehensive is an understatement. A 6-2 win over Reds. And next we'll check on the three Kansai clubs and how they got on in match day 9 with Lionel. Next, Lionel joins us to chat about a very mixed weekend for the three Kansai clubs. Firstly, Lionel, it's great to have you back on the podcast for the first time in 2020. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good on you. Yes, very good.
We're great, thank you. And just before we get into, as I say, a mixed bag for the Kansai clubs in J1 Match Day 9, I just wanted to get a taste of what it's been like back on the touchline, back behind the goals, taking photos, as you do almost each and every week for J Soccer Magazine and, other outlets. What's it been like in the poster... since the restart post-coronavirus, well, we're obviously not past the coronavirus, of course, but, we're back playing football. There are some photographers allowed back into the ground. So what's it been like for you, firstly, with no supporters in the stadiums in the first couple of weeks, and then with just getting a few thousand back in? How's it all been?
Well, it's been kind of mixed up experiences because it's great to be back. It's great to be back. It's great to see some football. It's great to go to the stadiums, to be able to do my work again. So that feels really great, and I really cannot thank Alan enough for that. When we started without the fans, it was strange, very strange, strange feelings. Strange to like not to have like reactions when the goal was scored. Strange to hear everything from the pitch. It felt really empty. It really felt empty. But I already experienced that in basketball because I was also covering the basketball for my other job. So I already had that experience before. And it's never good to see a stadium or an arena empty. And then now that the fans are back, it's great to see them back, but they can't sing, they cannot stand up, they cannot clap, they cannot do anything. So once again, it feels very empty. And during the Gamba Yokohama FC games, it was the first time I really heard the crowd, like not singing because they are not allowed to, but kind of cheering, like on the last goal, on Patrick's goal, the second one, I could feel like the whole stadium, while the 5,000 allowed in, like voicing out for like the, they were really happy, and I could feel it, and that felt really good. And it's strange because we don't know when we're gonna get the full stadium back. We don't know when they're going to be able to sing again. But, it's... Let's say it's good for now, right? We can't ask for more right now. So it's a mixed feelings, kind of.
Yeah, I tell you what, I think the Gumba supporters broke a few protocols in the 94th minute on Saturday night, didn't they? There are certainly a lot of people jumping up and down and screaming. But, I mean, you can understand it after Patrick's dramatic winner, no questions asked. And, I mean, if I was there in the same situation, I would have probably jumped the fence and gone chasing after Patrick as he had his way. I don't know, he's probably going to look for his family or something in the stands, but...
yes, definitely.
Yeah, what a dramatic finish that was. I mean, Sam. Yeah, I mean, we've looked on from afar, basically, haven't we? And wondered what it was like. And we've obviously had Dan on, and he's been to quite a few games that from up in the Penn media section. But it's really interesting to get to Lionel's perspective on what it's been like down pitch side, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, because you can only get a certain sense of things on TV, and it just the kind of all blends into one. You're kind of taken out of it. You don't really hear the crowd at all. I don't anyway, because not a lot's happening. There's just the kind of weird ripples of applause, like you're watching a tennis match and every shot is slightly politely applauded. So I was just wondering, Leonard, have you noticed a difference from maybe the first game you went to with crowds to the latest game in terms of, are they coming up with new ways to show support rather than just ripples of applause? Are they trying to circumvent the rules at all?
No, but they will try, they will like look for every opportunity to just, you know, clap their hands or to, they will speak. You can hear the crowd speaking. Like, I mean, like, that was 2 weeks ago. I was at the Kyoto game, like Kyoto Sanga versus, Avispa Fukuoka. And, there was, Juanma who was fouled and he just screamed, like really, he shouted so much. Like everybody could hear you could only hear him on the, like, on the pitch. Like really, he screamed like when he fell on the floor. And then, like, all the people behind me, understand, they were laughing as hell. And you could hear people, like shouting at the guys, like, you know, why are you doing? Why do you have to scream like that? And you could hear, like, you know, people are like, we've all been frustrated by those rules. But that's, you know, it's good for us for now. And they will try to find every opportunity to clap, shout, not shout, but like try to talk a bit. You can hear the crowd, but yeah, it's not, you know, they're not breaking the rules, but they are like, it's like borderline kind of.
Stuart Woodward was on a couple of weeks ago mentioning how that kind of crowds were trying to find different ways to show their chants, if you know what I mean, by kind of clapping the chants out and that sort of thing. Is that something that you've noticed at Gamba?
Yes, they've done that. Every corner, every free kick, every time there's a chance, they will clap every time. And you could feel like in the last few minutes of that game, especially that game, you could feel the crowd was really behind the team. And I think it really helped the team to come back into the game and score that winner, because you could feel the energy that was given from the crowd to the players. And, you know, that's something that the first few games without the crowd, you could feel that by the end of the game, players would drop, kind of like, okay, not try too hard to get that last ball, not run too fast to get that last, you know, or not. You could tell the difference. Now the players, they have the crowd back, and the crowd are like giving them like more energy toward the end of the game, and you can feel it, and it's great to have that back. It's really great to have it back.
Well, that's really interesting. Thanks for that, Leonardo. Great to get that perspective, as we say, from pitch side. It's tremendous to hear. So, let's get on to events on the pitch at the Panasonic Stadium on Saturday night. Then it looked like a pretty huge mismatch on paper. Third-placed Gamba hosted 17th-placed Yokohama FC at kickoff. And, Gamba had won 4 on the spin, obviously, before they'd lost last week to the leaders at Kawasaki, but only by a 1-0 margin, of course. And it appeared they had the perfect opportunity to get back to winning ways when Yokohama FC fronted up to Suita, having lost their last 4 games by a combined score of 13-1. But Yokohama FC, as they did in match day 1, where they put up a very spirited display away at Kobe, they have again rocked up to Kansai and acquitted themselves very, very well. But on this occasion, they've left with nothing, as we mentioned, a Patrick's dramatic headed winner in the 94th minute. Before that, though, Lionel, Adam Milson had opened the scoring very fortuitously after Kosuke Onose's shot went in off him. So, that had Gamba into the sheds at half-time, 1-0 up. The goal came somewhat fortunately, but did you feel that was a fair reflection on the first half? Did Gamba deserve to go in 1-0 up?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, Gamba, they've shown in the past, like, it's the same game, it repeats. It's like it's like that Groundhog Day. It really feels that way. Like, Gamba will dominate the first half, just like they did against Kawasaki, just like they did against other teams. They will dominate the first half. They'll be very physical. They'll be very strong. They'll put a lot of pressure. I saw Miura winning the ball back, like, 20 20 meters away from Yokohama FC's goal. I mean, that's how hard they are working during that first half, and they put so much effort that in the second half they will slow down. They will slow down the pace of the game, and that's how Yokohama could come back. And Yokohama, the thing that surprised me since the very beginning, I was at that Vissel Kobe Yokohama game, and even though they don't have such a strong team, they are playing football. They are trying to attack. They are trying to play, to pass the ball around. They are trying to show something. They are trying to, you know, it's a pleasure to watch them. So unfortunately for them, they are like, well, they are like 17th right now. What's their position right now?
Yeah, that's right. Or eight,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at least if you are a Yokohama fan, yes, you lose the game. You might not get that many points, but you will enjoy watching them. Sorry, and we had like a fabulous game. I mean, what's his name again? Inohara was good at the back. Jongaping was also good. They both had like a good game. Minami and the goalkeeper also had like a good game. I mean, he couldn't do much on both goals. The first one was a deflection, and he was gonna, I guess he could have saved that Onose's shot, but the deflection made it impossible for him. And the second one is like a header, like only like 2 meters away from him, 2-3 meters away from him. I mean, he couldn't stop that one either. And Gamba, I mean, they're playing beautiful football too. At the very beginning of the season, I was not too, I was not too satisfied by the way like Gamba was playing. But now they look really strong going forward. I mean, Usami Ademilson, they are having like a good season. Even though Usami is not scoring, he's creating space for the other players. He's like asking for the ball, passing the ball around. He's been really, really good so far. Yajima also, who I thought would never make it to the first team because he was injured and he went on a loan. And I thought like maybe he's not going to be the player that we need. But he's been showing like some good spirit. He's been good with the ball too. Ono also, who came from Sagantosu, he's been great. I really like that boy. I mean, he's really, really good. Running so much, running a lot, getting back, getting the ball back, going forward. And that's what I like about Gamba. It's like they are showing a lot of spirit there. They are defending, and then right away, they're going very fast, like counter attack and playing beautiful football. And I like it. But that much energy means that they will be weaker in the second half. And I think most teams understood that. You could see against Kawasaki. Kawasaki was better in the second half. Gamba was kind of tired. Players couldn't run much anymore. Against Yokohama, the same happened. And games before was exactly the same. Very strong in the first half, then second half, tired.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, that's a very good summary of how Gamba have gotten on, I think, in recent times, Sam. I mean, there was definite fortune behind Gamba's opener, but then, they basically gave a goal back to Yokohama FC via a ridiculously underhit back pass from Hiroki Fujiharu that Yusuke Minagawa was able to latch onto and, squeak the ball past Masaki Higashiguchi for Koki Saito to rifle in. And there were a couple of chances, Sam, for Yokohama FC to take the lead, but Masaki Higashiguchi stood tall in the Gamba goal. But I guess this is the week where Yokohama FC were better, and again we have to say they were unlucky to not leave with anything from this game.
Yeah, they kind of went back to the performances right at the start of the season. The last few weeks, I think they've been cut apart a little bit too easily, but there was a lot more fight in them this week. They went back to a bit more similar to the way they played against Kobe, actually, in that first game, where they've gone back to a four at the back. They've got the more experienced players in Yongapin and Inoue, both played very well, organised that defence well. And then you've still got the kind of attacking youngsters like Saito, like Seko in midfield, Matsuo as well. So there was a better balance, I thought, to the team. It wasn't completely inexperienced, and that was kind of costing them games. I thought generally they played pretty well. Gamba were the better team, probably did deserve the victory. I won't argue with that, but I thought they applied themselves a lot better. They looked like they were more up for it. They looked like they believed they could get a point. They got that look with Fujihara's back pass. I think maybe that's part of the tiredness that Lionel was talking of, maybe tiredness of mind, because it's a rare mistake, that from Fujihara. It was poor, but they took advantage of it. They got up after that. They believed that they could go on and win the game. They, really good attacking-wise. They've got a lot of flair about them, a lot of confidence, these young players. Saito especially and Matsuo, I've been really impressed with both of them. And Higashiguchi has had a very good season. So he's denied Minagawa, I think it was, a few times. So maybe a little bit of more of a clinical edge, and Yokohama could have really caused problems for Gamba, because, as Lionel said, they were definitely tiring in that second half. But credit to Gamba. I know it's quite a cliche thing to say, but champions or teams that are aiming for the league title will score goals late on in games that they're not necessarily on top of at the time. And they did that. They pressed towards the end. Patrick rose well with a brilliant header. So, full credit to Gamba, but I like what I saw from Yokohama.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, Koki Saito, after he had equalised, he had a header well saved by Higashiguchi, and then the Gamba keeper tipped over from the substitute, Leandro Dominguez. Patrick had a late header correctly ruled out for offside in the last 10 minutes, but yeah, as we've mentioned, in the 94th minute, he was basically the only one attacking Yosuke Idaguchi's beautifully swung in corner. I mean, it was literally pinged straight onto Patrick's head, and the big man fired home. And Lionel, we've talked about the reaction from the crowd. I mean, that was a huge outpouring, and you can understand it from the Gamba supporters. And Patrick, he's always had a flair for the dramatic, hasn't he? He's, wherever he's gone in the J League, he's always he's bobbed up with important goals.
Yeah, exactly. He's been doing that during his entire career, actually. He's like, really, when Gamba won everything in 2014, was 2014, right? Yes, 2014. He, like, him and Usami were amazing, and he was scoring like late goals and the last minute of the games. I mean, he's very physical, he's very strong. He's tall. It's when you get by the end of a game, like, such a player will put so much pressure on the defense. And when you play like 90 minutes of football, it's hard. It's really hard to defend on such like a big, huge, and actually he's quite fast guy. So yeah, really well done to him, and well done to Gamba. I mean, really, they've shown a lot recently, and it's good to see that. Really.
Yeah, fair enough too. So yeah, Gamba and Cerezo actually switched spots after match day 9. Gamba rose back up to second, and Cerezo dropped back to third after the other game that Lionel was at over the weekend on a Sunday night at the Yanmar Stadium. And not quite as much happened there between Cerezo Osaka and FC Tokyo. These two very much cancelled themselves out in a nil-nil draw. But, Patrick's dramatic late winner. I mean, as an FC Tokyo supporter, when Adam Milson swung over his cross from the right in second half stoppage time, I thought, here we go again. And it looked like Leandro was going to power his head up past Kim Jin-hyun, but the Cerezo keeper stood tall. And I tell you what, if we had had goal line technology, it would have been an interesting one to check out. But Kim saved brilliantly from Leandro's header. There were other chances, obviously, in the meantime. And for FC Tokyo, it was good to see Gol Hatano handed a first J1 start by Kenta Hasegawa. And he was called into action fairly early on with an impressive block from Tatsuhiro Sakamoto's header from 6 yards in the 11th minute. But, Lionel, a lot less happened, obviously, in this game. And, after a hectic Saturday night, you might have nearly been forgiven for nodding off and nearly falling asleep at times during the game on Sunday night.
The thing is, like, it's not a surprise. I mean, like, really, I was expecting like a 0-0 or like a 1-1 draw. I wasn't expecting too much from that game, because both teams are not going forward much. Both teams are very strong at the back and they defend very well, but they have more problems going forward. And the game started pretty well, actually. The first 10-15 minutes were pretty good, and I enjoyed those first like 10-15 minutes. But after that, it was just I don't know how to explain, but it wasn't great to watch. And the thing is, like Cerezo, they have a great back four. I really love that back four. I mean, Djungjic is such a good player. I think he's one of the best defender, if not the best defender in the J League. Sakamoto comes back pretty often to defend, and he's a great player. I think he's I really like him very much. Seko, Maruhashi, who was playing his 250th game today, I think. And Matsuda, I mean, they have a very strong back four. And I think their keeper is one of the best in the league, Kim. He's really such a good player. He knows when to lose time. He knows when to, you know, he will know all those little tricks to get your team to win the game. And I really like it. So they've been strong at the back. They're having problems with their forwards. I'm not too sure what Mendes is doing, but he's not doing great for Cerezo. I thought the coach always switched between him and Tokura. I prefer Tokura because Tokura is a great player to get fouls, to get free kicks in good areas, to run for the ball, to ask for the ball. I think he's better, but maybe he was injured for the whole season last year, so maybe he wants to be careful with that. I'm not too sure, but so far, Cerezo, yes, it's strong at the back, but going forward is that's the problem. That's where they really lack some firepower, if I could say.
Yeah, they're third at the moment, based really on that defense. I don't think anyone would argue that they're probably one of, if not the best defense in the league. But without a goal scorer, do you think that this defense alone will be able to see them challenge for a Champions League space? Or do you think they need to improve going forward, maybe get in another goal scorer for them to have any real designs on an ACL spot?
Well, they really need someone up front, that's for sure. Because, I mean, Kiyotake is great. He's, like, once again yesterday, he showed some, like, great skills. He's really good with the ball. But there's nobody to ask for the ball, to get the ball from him. There's nobody, like, creating space up front. So he's kind of, like, alone, trying to do everything by himself. With maybe Sakamoto is a good player, too, but that's it. That's about it. And I think it would be enough to get like a ACL spot. But if they want to fight for a title, they'll definitely need someone up front. And they definitely need like maybe one or two players, like one in the middle and up front. I think the Sosa who left, he was one of my favorite players at Cerezo. I really love that player. I thought he was great at getting the ball and making that link between the back and the forward, the defenders and the strikers. I thought he was a great player for that. He was like switching the play, switching sides. He was such a great player, and I think Cerezo missed that kind of player, plus maybe a striker.
Ben, just getting on FC Tokyo, obviously coming off the back of a pretty poor defensive performance, let's say, against Sagan Tosu. Did you see signs in the way that they were organised that they were a lot better defensively, or were they just a bit fortunate to come up against a Cerezo attack that isn't really going to create too many chances?
Yeah, as we said last week, Sam, I mean, their recent success, I mean, they haven't won any trophies, but yeah, I mean, the decent finishes in the league in the last couple of seasons have been based on that strong defence. So yeah, I mean, last week I was hoping that was just going to be an aberration, and I think, yeah, they were somewhat back to their reliable best here. I mean, for me, Ryoya Ogawa had a fairly ordinary game, but that was more going forward than tracking back necessarily. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously an important clean sheet, and obviously I would have Yeah, would have loved for that Leandro header to squeak past Kim Jin-hyun. And, yeah, if we could have come back with all 3 points, that would have been, yeah, really, really valuable, I think, for the team and their confidence for what's to come in the next few weeks. But, yeah, it's good to yeah, good to get that reliability back at the back. And hopefully that will be a sign going forward, because, as we've said in part one, you had Nagoya coming up this coming Saturday. So, yeah, we're going to absolutely have to be at our defensive best. I think the midfield helped here. Maybe the way the midfield was set up was a little bit more conducive to, yeah, to helping out at the back. There wasn't really that the spaces that Tosu were able to exploit between the midfield and defence last week. They seemed a bit tighter and a bit more awake to, yeah, not allowing Cerezo too much space. So, yeah, all in all, a decent enough display at that end of the pitch. It would have been nice to cause them a few more troubles throughout the game, not just in second half stoppage time. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, if you'd offered me a point at kickoff, I would have snapped your hand off. So yeah, I don't think either side can really complain with that. But well, yeah, Sam. Also on last week's podcast, we talked about Vissel Kobe and how they are the very definition of mid-table. Well, mediocrity is a little bit hard, but yeah, we said that if they don't get any sort of consistency moving forward, then that's where they're going to be stuck. And Lionel, when a team like Sendai, with all due respect to Sendai, who were 15th in the table at kickoff, turn up to the Neuview Stadium, then Kobe, with their collection of talent, and you know, their star-spangled squad, they simply have to do better, don't they, than losing 2-1 to Vegalta. I mean, it's two of the most comedy-owned goals you're ever going to see in this game. But I mean, you know, by the by, a team like Kobe has got to be beating Sendai when they are the visitors, surely.
Well, I said it many, many times, and I'll say it one more time. I'm so sorry for the people who follows me on Twitter. But I've said it many times that Dunkler is a terrible, terrible defender. Like, he was in France. He was terrible in France. And now he came here for, I don't know what reason they bought him. Why? Maybe he has a friend there. But he came back. That's 2 games and 4 goals. Like, Wiesel have conceded 4 goals. That's the exact same number of goals they considered in 4 games without him. So, and again, on Saturday, it was on Saturday, right? Yes, on Saturday. On Saturday, again, both goals were from his mistake. The first one was a bit unlucky, so don't want to blame him too much on that one, because it's a bit unlucky. He tries to stop that cross, came off his foot, and then lobbed the keeper. So, not, yeah, he's a bit unlucky. But on the second one, he goes for the striker, tries to get the ball before him, but he's too slow. Then he made like a huge space for Vegalta players, and that's how they got the goal. And yeah, I don't know why they really want to use this player. He's not good enough. Then about the consistency, the Vissel Kobe, yes, that's the main problem. They can be great when they work together, when they work as a team, but it feels that they don't play as a team. They passes the ball around. They pass the ball around, sorry. And it's fine to me, but you have to do something with the ball. Just don't keep the ball and do nothing with it. And there's Iniesta, once in a while, he's a genius. So obviously he will find the right player, the right movement. Furuhashi is great at making runs. Furuhashi is great at getting the ball and going forward. I think those are the two best players at Vissel. I mean, Iniesta and Furuhashi. They're doing great together. He's great at making those runs, but it just doesn't work for every game. I mean, it's just like, it's a little bit like Gamba right now. I mean, teams know what they have to do to stop that team, and that's the problem. They have they have a plan A, but they don't have a plan B. So those teams will know what they have to do. They have to just stay at the back, get the ball back when one of the Vissel player will lose the ball, and then go forward, right? Like very quick counter attack, and that's how they're gonna get goals, and that's how it's gonna work. Also, there's one more player that I'm not I don't know why they took him. I mean, they had a great goalkeeper. I really love that goalkeeper. I thought he was also one of the best in the J League. And they brought Ikura from Marinos. And Ikura will give you heart attack. If you are a Vissel fan, you will get heart attack for every single game. He's going to do something that will make you have a heart attack, really. And he gets the ball. He wants to pass it back with his foot. He wants to, like, sometimes, I don't know, he's taking so many risks, and that is not good. You don't have choices. Just kick the ball. Just kick it far away. It's fine to do it once or twice during a game. It's fine to do it like when you don't have any good options. And they don't do that. They want to get the ball from the back, clean and beautiful, going forward, like passing the ball around. Well, I don't think it works that way in football. I don't think you should have to do that only. You have to have a plan B, and they don't have that plan B.
Yeah, I've moaned and cursed about Ikura and Dankler and the rest of the Kobe defence till I'm blue in the face on this podcast. But I was just disappointed with them going forward. As you said, they just pass the ball around with no real aim to it. They keep the ball for the sake of keeping the ball. I think Furuhashi was a massive miss, because he is the one that will inject a bit of pace. He will be the one that makes the run for Iniesta, because mm-hmm. Douglas, as good a player as Douglas is, I really like Douglas. He's a lot more static than Furuhashi. He's good at getting the ball into feet, but you're not necessarily going to get him in behind. So Furuhashi is the one that is going to cause problems to the opposition, and they didn't have him. And they've got a good couple of youngsters. Older came in, he got in behind once, but they're not clinical enough for Oda. He's missed a few chances in the few games he has played. And, man, it's not fair to me to criticise him too much. I mean, he's only 18. But besides Furuhashi, and if you get Douglas in front of goal, I don't think there's a clinical edge to Kobe. They look quite pretty on the eye in possession, but I don't think there's enough about them at the moment to go out and then... Like games like this, they should be putting Sendai to the sword 3 or 4-0, and it doesn't ever look like they could do that to a team.
Yeah, can I? There's one player I'd like to talk about, and that I really like. And every time he started a game, Vissel Kobe won or they drew only once. It's Takuya Yasui. He's a very young player who will either replace Samper or Iniesta, and I think he's a great player. He's young, he is only 21 years old, but he's a great, great, great player, and I think he will be the future of Vissel Kobe. I think he will do very well for the club in the future, and I hope he gets more like playing time, because every time he started a game, they won that game, and they only drew once with him, like in the starting lineup. So that's why I don't understand why this boy doesn't get more time.
Oh. Yeah, I agree. I think they would have solved so many problems by having him play instead of Samper and keep Kim Sung-yu in goal. That would have been a perfect team, I think, for Kobe. It would have definitely helped. But yeah, I agree with you. He should have played. But yeah, they've gone down this route, and we get to watch Hiroki Ikura every week and just wonder what's happening next.
Yeah. Also, Vermaelen is like aging. Like, he can't run much anymore. And like, you can see like how painful it is for him to like get back into position to go back and defend. Like, I mean, he was always injured with Barca. He didn't play much. He's been having like a poor end of a career, I say, and it's painful to watch him play. I think they could replace him too and give more time to some of their Japanese players who I think can do better than him.
All right then. So yeah, Kobe, undone by some calamity defending, it must be said. But also, yeah, Sendai, they'll be very happy to return home with all 3 points. The Dankler own goal in the 22nd minute. Shuhei Akasaki made it 2-0 with 18 minutes left. And somehow the J League are still crediting Kobe's goal to Noriaki Fujimoto, even though most reputable outlets have it down as a Jakub Slavik own goal. I can't remember how many times it hit Slavik before it ended up in the net. But anyway, a win for Gamba, a draw for Cerezo, and a loss for Kobe in J1 Matchday 9. Lionel, thank you so much for joining us to round that all up. We know you're a busy man, so thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us this week. And, yeah, we look forward to catching up with you again as the season progresses.
Thank you very much. It was all my pleasure.
All right, thanks again to Lionel. We'll be back in a moment with Stuart Woodward. Next, to talk about events at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night, it's a big welcome back to J-Talk to Stuart Woodward. Stuart, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Not at all, mate. Okay, so let me just ask, before we get on to events on the pitch on Saturday night, and I guess what you saw at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night might sort of cloud your answer a little bit, but do you recall going into the game how you had felt the season had gone to this point? I mean, obviously a one-all draw, not too much has changed probably from the way you felt before the game. I mean, you know, many people just expected your boys to pick up where they left off at the end of last season, of course, that remarkable run to the title. And, I guess people expected you to carry on in a similar vein this season. But, I mean, the first 8 games of 2020 has been smack bang in the middle of how you got on in 2018 and then in 2019. You're right in the middle of the number of points you got in between for the first 8 games. So how had you felt the season had gone so far? Were you a little bit disappointed that you guys hadn't kicked on and gotten, well, closer to Kawasaki, I suppose, because they look like they're running away with it?
Well, yeah, of course, with the run of results, it's a little bit disappointing. But I'm taking every match as it goes, and enjoying the football. In most matches, the style that we're accustomed to is there. And we'll talk a little bit more about obviously the Kashio match and how that fits into the overall plan of things. But I think, as we mentioned before in one of the previous podcasts, we had Thiago Martins and Park injured, and the Park's now back, and I think he's made a quite a big difference. And so I think it's probably less goals going in now, and Thiago is still missed, so that is a real difference compared to the first, few matches with the ACL matches where things looked very, very good there. I think the break and the injuries, took a little bit out of the steam. And also I was thinking a little bit about the staff that Angie has this year. He's lost Greg and Peter. So I wonder how that's playing into his overall management of things, whether he has to do more or whether their influence is being missed, or whether even, the fitness is a little bit, on the downside compared to last year. But yes, I think that we definitely improving match by match, I would say. And sometimes the scoreline doesn't match the play. And if you watch the highlights, you quite often get like a balanced view of the match, but that's not really a balanced view when you look at the possession and the chances that we had. So yeah, a little bit disappointing, but always enjoyable to watch.
Have you noticed any difference in the way that teams come out and set up against you? Because maybe they were caught a bit surprised by the way you played the last couple of seasons. And have they kind of taken that on board and nullified a few threats? Or do you think it's just maybe Marinos are not quite up to speed through injuries, or maybe some players not quite reaching the levels of last season?
Yeah, of course. And what I missed was Nakagawa. He just faded out, because I think he probably had a niggling injury, and then now he's on the injury list as well. So the way those players all kind of fit together at the end of last year, it really hasn't come together this year. But in terms of teams figuring us out, in this match, Kashua had a plan, and if they have the people, very fast runners who can counter very quickly on any mistake, you know, then as long as they keep the ball out of their net, they can get a few, you know, good chances where it could be one on one, and that's a little bit of a gamble.
Yeah, so this game, it started quite open. I would have expected, well, like last week I predicted 4-4 and it didn't quite come to that, but it was still a good open game. There were chances for both sides. Alunga got in about the 5th minute down the right-hand side, but went for goal instead of crossing, and then Yokohama had chances themselves. So how did you view the kind of opening 45? Did you think you were quite on top, or was it quite a balanced game for you?
Oh, I thought we were really on top. Like the first few minutes, I think Marinos really, really dominated. And then, like that Olunga breakaway that you see on the highlights, that wasn't it wasn't typical of the play up until that point. And quite often in the match, Marinos were totally in control of the ball, and Kashima didn't really have a chance to get their formation going and even make any impact. And as soon as they got the ball, quite often it was taken away. So really it was all down to those kind of spots where they were able to where Kashima were able to get the ball a bit and push ahead, and quite often that was on the break with a counter. Yeah, so I felt also that they're, obviously they're a good team and, very, very capable of, scoring lots of goals. Easily it could have been, 3-3 for us. And, might have been a different match if we'd have got, an early goal or two. Looking at the the shots on goal, Marinos had like 17 shots to 11 and 13 on target compared to Kashua 6, and they kept the ball most of the time.
Yeah, just from what I was watching, it seemed like Kashua took a more negative approach than they usually have this season. A lot of the changes they made as well were quite negative in bringing defenders on, and they just kind of relied on Alunga on the counter-attack, and that did work for them in the end. In the second half, after 62 minutes, Matsubara, it was a dreadful error, I'm afraid, is trying to swing it back to his goalkeeper, not really got any contact on it. And Alunga has bared down on goal and finished. Like, I mean, you could pick, if you were going to pick a goal scorer for Kashua, it would be Alunga. So, yeah, what did you make of this goal? And Alunga had already given you a couple of threats. So were you quite worried that this mistake was coming?
Yeah, it was. It looked, if we were going to concede a goal, it looked exactly like that, that it was going to be like that. And there were one or two similar episodes earlier on. But yeah, as you say, Matsubara's been a kind of a stalwart of the team, for this season. But he really, I guess hasn't got the pace against Olunga, and also is I don't really know how Olunga helped him down. But even just that his face was in the dirt, and then it was up to Hatanaka to try and keep up with him and block it. It could have been blocked and it could have been saved, but it was definitely the way that it looked to go in. But it was quite funny though. I felt that the Marinos players at every opportunity were putting pressure on Olunga. If you looked at when there was a corner taken, Eric was like pressing up against him and just getting in his face, and Olunga had been warned by the ref a couple of times in the match for getting a little bit obviously annoyed with and fouling the Marinos players, but definitely they were all putting pressure on him, winding him up, and just keeping him trying to disturb his mental hold of the match. And and the funniest episode came, at the very end, where, with our substitutions, Watanabe Kota, who's 165 centimeters, was sent on to mark Olunga, who's 193, and So he'd got in his, well, he got in his face, but it was probably got in his chest, really, because it couldn't reach up there. But the referee had to, you know, separate them. And so the next time he comes striding back up and he's like, like the tough Yakuza guy who just strides in and makes his arms known, you know, towards you, or the annoying guy on the train. And you can see, you know, Olunga's face is like, get this midget away from me. You know, he's like, it's kind of swatting him away. And I noticed that the very final corner, even the Kashua players were helping Olunga out by sandwiching themselves in between so that Watanabe couldn't get near him. And it was just kind of comical, really. But it definitely seemed that there was a conspiracy to just, you know, annoy Olunga as much as possible, you know, to unsettle him.
Yeah, it's probably a wise decision. That was his 10th goal in only 9 games this season. Ben, he's been a link this week with a move to Beşiktaş in Turkey. What have you made of him this season? And do you think he has all the ability to make it in one of the top European leagues?
Well, yes, Sam. Actually, my next question was going to be to you, and wondering if maybe the Turkish fella from Football Radar had been in touch with you to maybe get a few pointers on Olunga's game. But I mean, yeah, he's obviously he's just been absolutely terrific, hasn't he? And it looks to me like, you know, his physique, his style of play could absolutely translate into a medium to very good European club. And Stuart, you must have been wishing that those Beşiktaş rumours had come true before Saturday, because he was literally the one man standing between your team and 3 points.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping, like, it, you know, somebody was saying, oh yeah, he's definitely going to go, and so it's like, you know, as much as I wanted to see him play, and especially, you know, after watching him in the Kyoto match, it was definitely a player that I wanted to see before he left. But I was half hoping that he would leave before this week and just be on the plane at Narita and off to Turkey. And I heard on the grapevine that he definitely wants to move, and he's a player at, you know, with his quality, you know, might find a better salary outside of Japan if he was picked up by one of these clubs. So that was I would say I've seen Olunga.
Yeah, well, that's good, because I mean, yeah, when we were teeing up your appearances, Stuart, I did say that I would like to get your thoughts on Olunga. So it would have been a bit of an anticlimax if he had have left before Saturday. But yeah, it sounds like it won't be too long before he might be off. And Sam, well, yeah, I don't want to flip your question back onto you, but I will do. I mean, yeah, I think there's obviously a difference between a Japanese player leaving the nest, as you like, and you know, going abroad and testing themselves in Europe, whereas Olunga is already playing abroad, and he's already played a little bit in Europe himself to begin with. So, I mean, how far do you think he can go in terms of maybe even getting top level teams in Europe interested in him in the next couple of years?
Well, I think he fully deserves the kind of recognition that he's getting with this, whether it goes through or not. I think he's been, without question, the best striker in the league. He's got a lot to his game, but he's got the physical attributes, the pace on the counter-attack, but then the intelligence he's got in front of goal, the way he can just slow things down, let the defender go past him, finish it off. He can either with the pass or with the finish as well. I mean, he's got a lot to him. I mentioned a few times before, I didn't see too much of him positive when he was first in J1 with Kashua in their relegation season, but he's obviously got the confidence from a season in J2, and he's just come out all guns blazing this season. I think, yeah, he's definitely got the attributes to it. Whether he's got the level, like, I don't know, maybe like a top league, like maybe Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, that sort of thing. But I think a team like Beşiktaş is probably a good level for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he made that move and then made it his own there, because yeah, I can't say anything but positive things about him this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Tremendous stuff. And as you say, Sam, yeah, 10 goals in just the first 9 games of the season. And so, yeah, Stuart, F. Marino's had to chase the game then in the last half hour. But, yeah, you will have been very happy to see your side fight back and ultimately grab a point. And, yeah, how have you felt Ado Onaiwu has gone so far in his first... yeah, obviously the first 9 games of his Yokohama F. Marino's career. This could be an important goal for him, I feel, as obviously the competition for places up front for Yokohama F. Marino's is very tight, and it's about to get even tighter when Daisen Maeda arrives.
Yes, that's true. I think he's made good appearances, but we haven't seen that many goals from him. But... it's definitely he's a good one to have on the bench or as a starting half to swap over with the other players there. Like just before the Kashua goal, you know, Marinos put on 3 players and took off Marcos Jr. and Eriki and swapped on. Ado is one of the players coming on, so there was a little bit of a disturbance in the lineup at that point, and that might have contributed to maybe the loss of concentration that ended up in that goal. But one of our members on our line commented, he will remain nameless, a few minutes after Ado had come on, the comment was, Ado is not the answer. Then a few minutes later, after the goal, Ado is the answer. came on. So I think if he scores goals, people are definitely going to warm to him, and he's a good player. And if you look at the goal, it looks like a totally instinctive goal. The ball comes to him and he shoots and passes the goalkeeper. Like, it's almost an effortless goal there. So, if he can do those goals, then that would be, really help us out in a way. And definitely, I think he's got a place, and, other players too, with this temperature, because the players just cannot play at that pace and keep it up. And they're really running a lot. The number of sprints and passes is phenomenal. And definitely, I think the 5 substitutes is a real help to us, just to freshen up the team. But I wasn't really sure about at the start, because we didn't score with our best players on. So, when it comes to 60 minutes and you're putting the, dare I say, the second best players on, that you really start to get nervous whether we can score a goal at that time. So I would, as a fan, might like to see the better players coming on for the second half. I will trust in our boss to make those decisions.
I just wanted to get your thoughts, actually, on kind of fringe players. I know it's not the most exciting question in the world, but basically, you've had a lot of injuries, as we've mentioned, with Nakagawa and Eric, and a lot of your January window kind of business was getting in squad players like Onaiwu, like Mizunuma, like Kaius Sento. So what have you made of these players? Have they done enough, really, to justify the being brought into the league champions? And going on from that, what do you think Daisen Maeda will bring to the team?
Yeah, Mizunuma is, I think, really good. Like, I like him, and I like his personality, and he's definitely feels as a Yokohama player. Like, that's one of the from the fan's point of view, definitely accepted in the team, and also genuinely a good player. But you see quite a few of the players that we brought in, Maya is off out to substituted out. Another player today, sorry, my name slipped me in my mind for a second there, has been loaned to Yokohama FC for a first. The initial, probably we didn't strengthen well enough, but it seemed we got a fairly good crop of players. But I think more that maybe they haven't fitted in with Postecoglou's plans, or he just hasn't selected them, and they've been a bit nervous about their playing hours or match appearances, and decided to ask to leave, whatever. Sure about how he will fit in. It was one of the players that I wasn't really aware of in the past. But again, it looks like a good addition to the squad.
Yeah, and just to get your thoughts, I don't think we've had you on since Keita Endo has sealed his move to Union Berlin. What did he offer to Yokohama, and how do you think he will do now with this big move to Germany?
I think he will do well in Germany if he gets a chance to play. I think it's going to be quite difficult to come into a team from Japan. I've seen him from the very entry as a youth player in the cup matches to making the team under Mombets and being selected at 19, and definitely improved and last year he really flowered. There were times when he seemed to stutter a little bit when he got the ball and everything was down to him, but in the end he just seemed to be scoring with ease in certain occasions. So it's definitely a great miss. He'll be greatly missed, and we'd like to have seen him play more with us. But it's always that kind of that bittersweet thing where you've seen somebody come up through your own club system and gone on to become a European level player, and that really gives you kind of confidence about the future. And at this match, we saw the debut of Matsuda Eitaro, who's come in from the youth team in January. Immediately on day one, was loaned to Sagamihara, and now in June, after playing seven matches in Sagamihara, has come back and he's had a first team match and played very well. And you can see the banner. There was the Matsuda Naoki banner that brought out the match closest to the anniversary of his death. And then next to that is "Welcome back, Matsuda," in English, welcoming a Matsuda onto the pitch for the first time in many years. So, I think while I'm sad to see Endo go, happy to see that Marinos are bringing on 19-year-old players from the youth system, and with that continual development. And I've also when I started to watch, Amano and Kida were just youth players in their first season too, and I've seen them come up and Amano go away and come back. Yeah, so I'm sad, but I think we will carry on. And before the match, all of the Endo fans assembled outside the stadium and lined up in their number 11 uniforms, and I was wearing my number 11 uniform for this match, and it would probably be resigned to the cupboard now for a little while.
very good. That's good answer, Stuart. Very good. And, great to see, new youngsters coming through. Well, not so great for me as an FC Tokyo supporter and all other J-League supporters to see, some more good youngsters coming through the F Marino system. But, it's terrific for you as, such a devoted F Marinos fan to see the next generation, being blooded. That's absolutely terrific. And as we begin to wrap things up here, I have to ask, did it feel especially claustrophobic at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night? 4,988. They couldn't have squeezed another 12 in. I mean, you must have felt like you couldn't breathe in there.
Actually, it was really hot. It was really, really hot. And especially wearing the mask, it was quite claustrophobic, as you say. The first time I was a bit late buying my ticket, so I was around the side on the back stand and had quite a good view there. Then the next time I was trying to sit with a friend in our usual place and ended up on top of the gate, which is even further away from the pitch than the pitch than normal. And this time I finally managed to get the seat where we would normally sit at Nissan Stadium behind the marathon gate. And then I realized that I'd chosen the worst seat in the stadium because we can't stand up. And sitting down, I had the pole of the glass window of the gate right, almost in line with the goal. So I had to, lean to the left to see the ball when the ball was at the goal. And then when the ball was bouncing around, I could see ghost images and ghost players through the reflection of the glass of the mirror. And I was thinking, gosh, of all of the seats I could have chosen, that really is probably one of the only seats in Nissan Stadium with an obstructed view. So I will be looking to get a better seat next time. But as you say, that's almost 5,000. I wonder if it was because it was a Saturday that they filled it up. But it was a lot of people there. I wouldn't fancy being in Ajinomoto in the summer in this heat. I really almost had heat stroke there last time.
I absolutely understand. I'm not able to go obviously regularly these days, but it's probably a good thing. And once the rainy season stopped, the summer has well and truly kicked in, and it's been absolutely brutal the last couple of weeks, hasn't it? So Sam, as we begin to as we properly wrap things up from the Nissan Stadium, you predicted a 4-4, but I guess at the end of the day, it sounds like 1-1 was a fair enough result. And while you might have been a little bit disappointed with the way Kashi was set up, I guess you can understand it considering the amount of firepower that F Marinos have at their disposal. So probably the points were shared, and justly so.
Yeah, as a neutral, I was disappointed that Kashua kind of shut up shop. But I think it shows a good sign, actually, for the way Kashua are going to go about this season. Because you can't just be gung-ho all the time. There are going to be games when you have to sit back and defend to take a point. And Marinos away is one of them. So, in fact, I'll give credit to Nelsinho, actually. Because Yokohama were the better team. They had more chances, more possession. Kashua were limited to really a longer break. So he saw that and has shut up shop, and he's got himself a point, so fair play to him and Kashua. I think Yokohama, after they equalised, they were the better team. They had a couple more chances, but, I mean, Kashua defended fairly well, actually, and Nakamura made a couple of saves. So I think Yokohama probably shaded it, but I think Kashua were deserving of a point.
All right, then. I'd like to officially announce that I'm retiring Richardson Yellow Card Watch. After our hero managed to avoid another one for, I believe, the third straight game. So, that gimmick has well and truly run its race. And, the next time he gets one, I'll probably mention it. But, for the time being, you can consider it retired. So, for now, Stuart, I guess we'll leave it there. You will have been disappointed not to have won at home, I suppose, against Kashua. But, having to come from behind. And the source of your goal, as you said, Adeo Naiwu, good to get him up and running, hopefully, this season. And yeah, hopefully a taste of things to come from him. And yeah, well, we hope your boys are properly click into gear in the next few weeks, and you yeah, begin to make up some ground on Kawasaki, because it looks like they're just about going to run away with it. But for now, yeah, we look forward to catching up with you again, obviously, throughout the season. But yeah, thanks for your time on this week's episode.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, I was disappointed. It could have been 4-1 to Marinos, so that really would have made my night. But yeah, I think Kashua played it well, and had their goal come earlier, I think Marinos may have had more time to have put their high gear on and scored two more, you know. So yeah, I think they strategically played it well by leaving their goal till late.
Rightio then. All right. Well, yeah, we'll leave it there with Stuart. Thanks ever so much again for your time, mate. And yeah, after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will be back to round up the rest of the J1 Match Day 9 results. Okay, we have four games left to cover to wrap up the rest of Match Day 9, Sam. Yeah, the last four games, they all ended in home wins. We'll begin at Todoroki and the leaders, Kawasaki, who maintained their unbeaten record with what looks to be, on paper at least, a regulation 2-0 home win over struggling Oita, with the goals coming in the first half hour from Kaoru Mitoma, who of course set up Ryota Oshima's stunner last week in the win at Gunma Osaka, and Leandro Damião. Sam, is it as cut and dried as it looks on paper, and indeed the two goals?
Yeah, this was a bit of a procession, really. They'd be a bit disappointed not to have got three or four, but they got the game wrapped up early, a bit like when they played Kashua and Tokyo earlier in the season. They didn't have to exert much energy in the second half. Oita didn't offer much going forward. If anything, stats are a bit, they go between 1 and 3 shots on target. I think it was only 1, and certainly I don't remember anything else. They didn't really offer anything. Kawasaki, yeah, just a professional display that, yeah, just completely in control. I don't think there was any doubt from the first minute that they were going to win this game.
All right, and yeah, obviously we've spoken in recent weeks about how Oita have just, yeah, basically fallen off a cliff this season. And, well, anybody who supports them will have been, I guess, well, disappointed with what transpired. But ultimately, at the end of the day, not all that surprised, I guess, at the way the season's gone so far. This was probably to be expected.
Yeah, I mean, they'd probably be fairly happy to have kept it at 2-0. And, I mean, the second goal is their own doing as well. I mean, they're passing it around the back, as they like to do. But then Watari's, the striker, is really deep. And for whatever reason, he dummies it as it's going back towards his own penalty area. And it plays in Leandro Damião. So it was just another piece of weird play from Oita. They tried to change things up. Takagi, who'd had a bit of a shocker for the past few weeks, as out, and Mun came in. He did okay, but yeah, realistically, Oita weren't as horrendous as they have been, but they kind of had nothing going for them going forward. So yeah, pretty disappointing. Kawasaki, I thought, just played well. Mitoma again, I think every game I've seen him, he's been superb. It's looked, at least on paper, to be a really good goal from Mitoma in at the near post, but afterwards he admitted that he was aiming for the far post, so got quite lucky with this. I'd have kept quiet if I was him. But yeah, otherwise, Frontale played very well. A bit more on Ryota Oshima from the loving last week. His back heel in the second half to Tanaka, who hit the bar, was just sublime. And yeah, they're just playing, firing on all cylinders, Kawasaki, and yeah, fully deserving of their place at the top of the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't argue with that. And yeah, Kaoru Mitoma, I know there's one of our patrons in particular who will have been watching him more closely than usual on Saturday night, after pulling a very special card of his from our card break that we mentioned right back at the start of the episode. I don't know if that patron wants me to reveal his identity or not, but yeah, I'm sure he knows who he is if he's listening, and he will have been very happy to see Mitoma score Kawasaki's opener on Saturday night. All right, well, yeah, next to events at Nihon Daira, where Shimizu S-Pulse ended up 3-1 victors over Consadole Sapporo. Sam, this game was 1-1. Shota Kaneko giving the hosts the lead in first half stoppage time from the penalty spot, and then 7 minutes into the second half, Musashi Suzuki firing in a superb free kick. But I'm going to ask you, and to the layman it appears obvious, but Shunta Tanaka, who came on at half time for Sapporo, was shown a second yellow card in the 63rd minute, and from there Espols ultimately scored two goals late on to run out 3-1 victors, as I said. So did this all hinge on the Tanaka red card, and the Sapporo defenders simply run out of gas in trying to cover the extra man of Espols, and that numerical advantage finally pay benefits for Espols?
Yeah, it was definitely had a huge impact on the game. It was pretty even, I thought, in general. Shimizu got the lead right on the stroke of half time through a penalty. And I mean, you want to get rid of the Richardson gimmick. So I want to introduce Arono's antics, because he got maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, he got sent off for a kick. And in this one, they get the penalty, Kaneko. And then Arono just spends about 2 minutes just doing everything he can to put him off. Just jumping around. I don't know what he was doing, what he was saying to Kaneko. And it was just, a bit disappointing to see. I think he should have been booked, but somehow gets away with it. So it's just been a bit hit and miss at Arono, with good and bad points over the last few weeks. But yeah, they took the lead there. But Shimizu, were a little bit fortunate, maybe. I think Sapporo edged the first half, but then once they had the lead, started the second half well. It was only when a really good free kick from Suzuki to bring them back. So then it was finally balanced, and the red card gives Shimizu a lot of possession. They don't have to worry about their leaky defence quite as much. But it was a case of pretty similar to how they've played in other games this season, where they look good to a point and their football is very nice to watch, but the end product isn't there. Players like Nishizawa missed quite a decent chance. Kaneko also, where you're just kind of free in the box, but just the finishing is lacking. And for long periods, it looked like Shimizu weren't going to break them down. It took a really good effort from Renato Augusto, an absolute thunderbolt into the top corner that Sugano couldn't deal with. So, it took a moment of quality for Shimizu to get the lead, and then they went on and took confidence from that. The third goal is really nice. El Sino playing it through to Carlinhos. Great footwork from him, and he finishes it for 3-1. So once they got that confidence of 2-1, then they showed themselves to be a really good side. But I just think without the red card, I don't think they'll go on and win this game. It'd be quite tight, and with Sapporo probably the likelier to go through. But fair enough to Shimizu, they got a vital 3 points, and you can see what the confidence gives them going forward. There's a bit more belief at 2-1, so hopefully for their sake they can build on that and take it into next week.
Yeah, most definitely. And obviously, the last four games now unbeaten for Espols after they'd begun the season in, obviously in an ordinary state, losing their first five. So it's, very encouraging for them. And, Carlinhos looks like he's going to be the main man for them. So, again, another goal for him is more than welcome for Espols and all of their bands of supporters, of course. So, great for them. Sapporo, obviously, a little bit unlucky with the Tanakas getting sent off and then, running out of gas at the end of things. Sapporo are going to have to dust themselves down and try and derail the Kawasaki juggernaut, because Frontale head up to the Sapporo Dome on Saturday the 15th in match day 10. So that'll be a huge test for Consadole, but they might be the sort of decent footballing side that could give Kawasaki a proper game. We shall see. Before we get to the other highlights from the match day 10 fixture list, we obviously have two more games to cover. The first of them we will touch on is the other game from Sunday. Obviously, Cerezo FC Tokyo also took place on Sunday, but an hour earlier than that, Hiroshima hosted Shonan, and I guess along similar lines to the Kawasaki 2-0 home win over Oita. Sam, this looks like a regulation 1-0 Sanfrecce home win. Obviously, the stats are very weighted in their favour, 20 shots to 5. Belmare obviously really struggling for confidence. Yuya Asano got the only goal of the game in first half stoppage time. That was after he had earlier headed on to a post. So, a good reward for him at the end of a first half of foraging for the Sanfrecce forward. And well, I guess in a way, Sam, this kind of sums up the difference between Hiroshima and a team like Kobe. Hiroshima have hosted again, all due respect to Sean Hunt, a weaker opponent, and they've taken care of business. They haven't left the door open for Belmare, whereas, as we talked about with Lionel, Kobe have hosted Sendai, who were 15th at kickoff, and they've come a cropper. So again, this is a professional display from Hiroshima, and I mean, they probably showed a few more flashes than we're used to from them.
Yeah, I mean, they were helped a lot by Shonan offering very little. They played two strikers up front that aren't going to score goals in Ibasuki and Iwasaki. Neither look good. I mean, they've got Tarik El-Yanoussi on the bench. They doesn't come on until the 88th minute in a game you're 1-0 down. It's just a real lack of ambition from Shonan. They didn't go forward. But you've got to give credit to Sanfrecce. They saw this out, that you can only beat what's in front of you, I suppose, and they never at any moment looked like they were in any trouble. They're not a team that are going to make stupid mistakes to allow the opposition a goal. They look very comfortable. They are a good team when they have possession. Often they have to defend because that's kind of the way that they're set up. But against a team like Shonan, they're allowed to have a lot of possession, and they look good in that possession. Kashiwa was back on the wing here, and he's a key player to the way they go forward. And yeah, there was a lot of good balls into the area. I thought Yuya Asano did well. He was always involved. That he hit the post, then he got his goal, of course. So yeah, I was pretty impressed with the way Sanfrecce played it, because you're against, they're not used necessarily to playing against a team that is just out there to defend. So it can be difficult for teams to come out and have to play against that sort of team. But they always looked on top. They got their goal. And yeah, never in doubt. Unlike Kobe, you'd see this situation. They might take a 1-0 lead, and then Danker would give the ball to the opposition, or Ikura would wander 30 yards from goal. So yeah, as you mentioned, this is the difference between them, and why Sanfrecce are going to win these games more often than not.
All right then. And yeah, the last game of the match day that we'll touch on was between teams that were bunched together in joint 12th position at kickoff. Kashima Antlers hosted Sagan Tosu, and at the end of the match day, well, Antlers have remained 12th, but the Tosu have slipped down to 15th after a 2-0 home win for Kashima. Again, probably a regulation 2-0 for Antlers that you might have penciled in your predictions on the transfer market prediction game. It did take them a while to ultimately break the deadlock, though. Ryuji Izumi got the opener with just over 20 minutes left, and then Everaldo made it 2-0 with 10 to go. So obviously, yeah, in terms of their standings in J-League history, Sam, there's a no comparison between Kashima and Tosu. But so far this season, they'd obviously played to a similar level. Are there more and more signs in the last couple of weeks that Antlers might be kicking into some sort of form?
Yeah, I think so. Even the games that they were losing maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I thought they were playing okay and getting better. And I thought if it took them a while to get into this game, I thought Tosu, they've not got the quality of players that a lot of teams have in this league, but they put in a bit of a fight, which is something Shonan and Oita were completely lacking. So I got to give them credit. They defend really well. Eduardo had one where he hooked the ball off the line with a terrific goal line clearance. It's his second of the season. The other one did the rounds a few weeks ago where he flicks it up somehow and manages to clear. So so fair play to him for that. And I thought Tosu fought well, but eventually Kashima did get on top, and then they've started to play well. Everaldo has come into the games a lot more. I think that hat-trick against Oita has really boosted his confidence. And some of the football they played for their goals was very nice, especially the second one, with youngsters Araki playing through to Someno, then the back heel to Izumi is delightful, and he squares it to Everaldo. It was like watching kind of peak Arsenal. It was walking the ball into the net, but it was lovely to watch. And yeah, I thought, as you said, they grew into this game, and yeah, they were worthy winners. And I like what's happening actually at Kashima. There's still a few issues to sort out. They went with their third change of goalkeeper for the season, with youngster Oki coming in after Soga had to have two fairly poor performances in League and League Cup. And Kwanson Tay is also out after a poor performance. So he's chopping and changing a little bit, but eventually he's kind of plugging gaps. He's solving a few issues. They now look like a cohesive unit going forward. So now just work a little bit more on the defence, which wasn't troubled too much by Sagan Tosu in this game. But once that's sorted, then maybe they can start moving and looking like a more formidable force that Kashima should be. But I thought there were decent signs in this game.
Yeah, all right then. So as I mentioned, yeah, Antlers stayed 12th in the table, but they made up a bit of ground on a couple of teams above them who were dropped points in match day 9. So yeah, they'll look to carry on this winning run with, yeah, they just notched consecutive victories for the first time all season, the Antlers, when they host Kobe in the only game of the match day 10 slate to be played on Sunday the 16th. So obviously that means all of the other 8 games on the Saturday, and it gets going with a game that we've already mentioned, Sapporo hosting Kawasaki at the Sapporo Dome. That's a 2 o'clock kickoff up at the Dome. You would think that, yeah, why on earth would they kick off in the middle of summer at 2 o'clock? Well, of course, they're playing inside, so it doesn't matter. And, yeah, that promises to be a really entertaining game, I feel. Elsewhere, Sam, I don't know. It's kind of difficult to pick out, you know, games that might be particularly entertaining. I think I'll be hiding behind the couch for most of FC Tokyo versus Nagoya, just petrified about what Grampus might do to FC Tokyo. But, yeah, we'll wait and see on that. I don't know, Kashiwa Cerezo, perhaps? But, I mean, it's two teams currently inside the top six, but you'd imagine that Cerezo would just do as much as they could rely on their stout defence to try and shut down Reysol. So, I mean, that could be it could be entertaining in some respects, but it probably ultimately relies on Reysol getting an early goal to kind of draw Cerezo out of their shell.
Yeah, it does look, it's just kind of a contrast of styles, really. So it will be quite interesting to see if Cerezo, the kind of probably the best defence in the league, can deal with Olunga, who's been the best striker in the league. It's a different proposition to anything they've faced this season. So that's going to be intriguing, I'd say. Not necessarily the most exciting game, but it should be an interesting one. And I think there are a lot of that quite similar that you don't necessarily think are going to be blockbuster 5-4s or anything, but have an interest to them. Tokyo Nagoya will be one of them. Can Tokyo continue a better defensive record when Nagoya full of confidence coming to them after that 6-2 win? And then on the opposite side, how are Urawa going to bounce back from that defeat? Because they've got Sanfrecce Hiroshima away, which are not going to be an easy team to break down. And they've got the quality, as we've seen, to go forward. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back from that. And yeah, I'm glad that the early game is Sapporo versus Kawasaki, because I've been lucky, I think, with the 6 a.m. starts that I've had. They've all been cracking games, and this one has the potential to be so as well. Like, on their day, we could have like a League Cup final where it was just end-to-end great action. Or Sapporo at their worst when they're so far open. They got battered by Kawasaki. I can't remember the score. I think it might have been 7 or something like that, either last season or the season before. So it has the potential to be an interesting and wildly open game in one respect or the other. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the fixtures.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Well said, Sam. All right, well, before we leave, though, in the, mentioning high scoring, the possibility of high scoring games, I should have mentioned that when we were talking about the Shimizu and Sapporo. I mean, this is the ultimate revenge for Espols, this victory 3-1 at home over Consadole on Saturday evening, because you probably remember, Sam, I'm not sure if the listeners do, but last season when these two teams faced off at Nihon Daira, the visitors Sapporo won 8-0, and they actually won the home game as well, Sapporo, 5-2 over Espols last year. So last season was a 13-2 aggregate for Consadole. So the fact that Shimizu have rocked up at home and beaten Sapporo with so many skeletons in their closet when they faced Consadole and run out 3-1 winners will have been hugely satisfying for all of the players that have obviously still at the club from those two games. Peter Klimovsky, the manager, wasn't there, of course, but he will have been rapt to get another win under his belt. And just for the record, Shimizu are away at Sendai this coming Saturday. So two teams who tasted success in match day 9 will be hoping to start perhaps a bit of a run with a second consecutive victory. All right, well, Sam, I think we'll leave it there. It's been a terrific to catch up with Lionel and Stuart throughout the episode, and obviously to get your thoughts as well. And it's the obviously we say it every week, but from this coming weekend, the games really do start coming thick and fast, don't they? With another midweek round coming midweek following this coming weekend's action. So it's you're really going to have your work cut out for you.
Yes, total non-stop action. I think Yokohama are playing every weekend and midweek until the 1st of November, I think it was, that was coming out. And then we've still not had a break because we've had the League Cup this last midweek and this midweek coming. So, it's all action. Last week we got treated to a King Kazu start, but unfortunately his diving header was saved. So maybe he can get another chance away at Sapporo this week. But I don't know if he's had quite enough time to recover. But so at least the League Cup group stage is over tomorrow. So that's one thing to be thankful for. And then we can get into the absolute grind that is the rest of the league season.
Yes, most definitely. All right, well, so we'll leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. We'd like to thank Lionel Pigay and Stuart Woodward for their time. We'd like to thank our patrons for their support on Patreon. And, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the full Match Day 10 fixture list. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.